The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hysteria is brought to you by Ritual. Alyssa, do you ever feel bad about not eating enough fruits and vegetables?
Aaron, I almost always eat enough fruits, but never enough vegetables. They're just not my favorites.
My problem is I screw up at the grocery store, right?
What do you mean?
I buy too many vegetables, and then they all go bad, and then the next time I'm like, don't buy so many vegetables.
It is 100%
like a seesaw of buying too, because I don't like throwing away food. But, you know, luckily, if I am on one of those swings where I am lacking vegetables.
Things are a little slow.
Yeah, Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus Multivitamin isn't exactly a salad in a pill, but it's formulated to help fill key nutrient gaps that you might not get from your diet.
You know why I love Ritual, Erin? Because
why?
It's so easy to make part of my daily routine. Some of my old vitamins, I really would have to take on like a full stomach so they didn't upset my stomach, so I didn't have vitamin burps all day. Mm-hmm. But now I get up whenever I remember. I take my Ritual, little minty essence to kick off my morning, no tummy troubles, ready to go. Easy peasy done.
Easy peasy done. And it's also, well, it works. We know it works.
We know it works.
A university-led clinical trial for their Essential Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy. And the results were that it increased vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks.
Their Essential for Women 18 and Over multivitamin contains 9 key nutrients in 2 delayed-release capsules designed for optimal absorption per day. Designed to be gentle on the stomach, as I mentioned, with a minty essence, as I also mentioned, in every bottle that makes taking your multis actually enjoyable. Ritual's Essential third-party tested for heavy metals and clean label project certified, so you know you can trust what you're putting in your body. Instead of striving for perfect health, aim for supporting foundational health. Get 25% off your first month only at ritual.com/hysteria. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 and over to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/hysteria for 25%. Off.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, what's the first thing you do in your own life to signify that spooky season has started?
Erin, at my mom's house, there is a chicken scarecrow who we refer to as Pantaloons. And when Pantaloons goes up, it is spooky season. Pantaloons is going up this week.
Okay. In my house, it is when we break out the Halloween-themed pajamas. The little kids are wearing their Halloween-themed pajamas.
They are out. I saw them.
When we allow the Ghostbusters theme song to be played in the car after preschool.
I love that.
It's Juniper's favorite song. And I told
like the
her
Ray
that
Parker version?
Yeah, just the original one.
I Ain't Afraid
one.
Of No Ghosts, that one.
Yes.
Okay.
Bustin' Makes Me Feel Good. We listened to it in the car after preschool, and I made up one of those mom lies where I was like, it doesn't work during the rest of the year. It only works in September and October.
That's funny.
Yeah. She doesn't believe me, though. It's just me and you today, Alyssa.
It's just us.
Just us. And we like welcoming guests. They're great. Our stable of guests is fantastic. But I also love just a one-on-one. So this is a one-on-one.
That's what we went for.
We're going to talk about the news of last week and the way that all of that has kind of devolved into infighting about what's real. Yeah. What's real online, who's the rightest person, who's lying, who's telling the truth, and I don't think it bodes well for a future of fact-based existence.
No, not at all.
We also talk about Kash Patel, who is not making things any better as head of the FBI.
but did enjoy a nice Italian meal.
He did enjoy a nice Italian meal on the night of the tragedy that has apparently been consuming the entire right wing of this country. Then we talk a little bit more about Jeffrey Epstein. Somebody projected him on the side of Windsor Castle.
And the emails keep coming.
And the emails keep coming. We're for it. We're tired, but we're for it.
Transparency now.
Transparency now. Then we talk about a couple more news hits before we get into that Wired story, that weird Wired story.
About surrogacy.
About surrogacy.
Eye-opening.
I've got some controversial opinions, people are going to get mad, and I see you, and I don't want to hear it. And then we're going to get to Sani Petty. We talk about the summer I turned pretty, the summer I turned petty, perhaps.
But either will do.
This is Hysteria, the podcast for people who are suddenly locked in on Candace Owens. It is a problematic lock-in. Alyssa, probably my most problematic lock-in I've ever had. It's a weird time. Alyssa, the face you are making is agape.
Because you mentioned, we were talking about Candace Owens the other night, and I had a bunch of laundry to fold. So I was like, I don't know. I've never really listened to this person. Let me sit down. And an hour and a half later, I had listened to Candace Owens go off, and my laundry was folded, but my heart was
racing.
Broken. Yeah. I was like, I need to take a walk outside and do that, like, that eye thing where you, like, shift your eyes back and forth looking at nature so your heart rate goes down and you become less anxious.
Wait, is that really a trick that works?
Oh, 100%.
What?
If you go outside and you go walking and you consciously look from side to side, it, like, does something to your brain and it really helps with anxiety. And
wow.
It did. I walked my cul-de-sac up the way and I was like, whew. She is a journey.
She's a lot. The reason that I'm locked in is not because I'm into that stuff. Anti-Semitism aside, she is a very good storyteller, telling a very interesting story right now.
Yes, this is what we talked about. It's like we stipulate to all the highly problematic things, but when you're looking at people who can communicate. She's a good communicator.
Mm-hmm. She's a good communicator. She's got a good pod setup, good lighting.
She's got, like, a good voice.
Got a good voice, unlike, you know, some certain wives of Stephen Miller. I think what's really interesting right now, and I think part of the reason I'm locked in is because when Charlie Kirk was shot and killed last week, Wednesday, literally, like, hours after we got out of this, maybe an hour after we got done recording, the thing that scared me the most in the days after was that there was going to be some sort of, like, just eruption of political violence beyond what has already erupted in this country, and that it was going to be aimed exclusively at people on the left who speak up in favor of left-leaning political views. But really what it's feeling like now is that we're watching this really odd, finger-pointing civil war that looks like it's starting to engulf, like, the far right.
Yeah.
The MAGA right, the grifter right. And so we're going to kind of – I don't really want to talk about, you know – I'm not trying to get anyone fired here, you know.
By talking about
the legacy of somebody that had, like, a complicated way of interacting with the American public. But I am interested in the conflict that's been ensuing and how it reflects the culture that we're living in right now. So last week, after Kirk was shot and killed, rumors swirled about the motivation and ideology of the perpetrator. Like, before we even knew who he was. Although we did know he was a he because, like, women don't do this.
It's safe to say.
This is, right. But before people even knew who he was or why he'd done it or had any clue whatsoever to, like, what was going on, we had people from just random online people with no information to the fucking leaders of the free world openly speculating and insisting that this was the result of leftist ideology and this is why the left is evil and this is why they are going to be attacked. They have it coming. There's this big war on they. And we all kind of already knew that they've always wanted to declare war on them. So it made sense. But, you know, it turns out that it was a lot more complicated, right?
Yeah.
So we're still learning about who the person was that did it. We're also still seeing people like Utah Governor Spencer Cox and Donald Trump and figures like J.D. Vance, who hosted a podcast because apparently
from his office.
So weird. Like, there's a political assassination and you host an emergency podcast. Like,
that was pretty brain melting.
But like, what? Whatever. You know, I'm just going to put that aside because I could talk probably for 15 minutes about what a weird move that was. And like you pointed out in our production meeting, Alyssa, J.D. Vance, like, flying on Air Force Two to, like, help carry Kirk's coffin but stepping out of step with the military members
If you're going to do it right.
There's been a lot. Everybody is trying to use the death of this person.
Yes.
For their own ends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of gross.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where we are. So Tyler Robinson is the one who was charged with aggravated murder, among other offenses. Robinson is a white guy from a MAGA family. When I found that out, I got to say it made me happy, not that anybody had died or that a white guy had done it, but just that I thought that, like, the violence that would have been unleashed.
Mitigated a bit.
Yeah. It turned the temperature down a little bit. The Wall Street Journal falsely reported that he had a transgender and anti-fascist ideology motivation. And the Guardian also published a sketchy source that declared him left on everything. But both of those reports were later retracted.
Mm-hmm.
Look, everybody's got an agenda right now. Everybody. Like, the death of journalism and the filtration of politics into literally everything, the elimination of, like, independence, means that nobody's a reliable source. Like,
Right. Everybody
is pushing an agenda. And so the information that we are getting from, like, law enforcement, I was like, I kind of don't believe them. And that sucks. You know, I don't believe what law enforcement has said.
Well,
I don't.
And Aaron, not just for that, but how otherworldly, how truly deranged is it that all of the news, the breaking news on Charlie Kirk, was presented by the president via social media or his appearance on Fox and Friends?
It was weird that he appointed himself like the ringmaster.
It's crazy.
Like, he was the one that announced that there was an arrest. He was the one that announced the death, not his representative, not his, you know, like a family spokesperson or something. It was like the president announced the death of Kirk. It's
on
very weird.
On X or Truth Social, whatever his thing is called.
But it was
really like, and you know why he did it. He wanted the clicks. He wanted the likes. He wanted to be the one to deliver the news. It was not the work of a commander in chief who, if nothing else, their job is to calm the country. That's really, if you take away everything, really, president just keeping everybody calm and keeping terrible things from happening, violence from erupting, really sort of fundamental to the task. And
yeah. The only way that Trump is comfortable with other people being in the headlines is if it somehow also gets him attention.
Right. Right.
And it just felt like, and I'm saying that because days later, I think 2 days later, a reporter asked him, like, hey, how you doing? Like, your friend died, and he was like, yeah, I'm okay. Anyway, I'm building this big, cool ballroom. Like, it was
nuts.
It was so crazy. It was like shades of 9/11. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, man, well, now I guess my building's the tallest building. It's like, holy shit, dude. Like, did you feel anything, or were you just excited to be somebody that was getting as much attention as possible? Were you excited to be at the center of this? And, like, it felt kind of gross and obscene. You know, so here's the slap fighting that's been happening in the media. People leapt onto the story that he was a groiper after, according to Vanity Fair, engravings on the bullet casings used by the killer were engraved with phrases from memes that made it seem like the individual was extremely online. There isn't really, I haven't seen any evidence that he was hanging out in the, like, groiper areas, which is a thing that I just learned about. I'm not going to pretend to be a groiper expert.
No, I'm glad you said it first because I didn't even know how to pronounce groiper.
I mean, it's just, it's one, it's like, I'm online enough to know that it's a thing, but I'm not like, I'm not like somebody who can be like, no, a Gruyper would never. Like, I would never. I don't know. But they're fans of Nick Fuentes, the Your Body, My Choice
guy.
Who looks a little bit like the leprechaun from the leprechaun movies. And I know I always I compare Fox News' Brian Kilmeade to the leprechaun from the leprechaun movies a lot. But
I mean, if it fits, it fits.
They both could be leprechaun-y together. but more evidence in the form of text and Discord messages has been released. And it appears Robinson might have just been like a normal guy.
Ish.
Just like a normal online kid.
Right.
Like, his family was proud of him. Mm-hmm. His mom loved him. He was, like, in touch with his family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't just somebody who had spiraled off into like, darkness. So Discord messages obtained by independent journalist Ken Klipperstein show a very vanilla and pretty apolitical history on Discord. Mm-hmm. Only two messages he'd ever sent contained the words Trump or Biden. And neither of those expressed an opinion. Hmm. A close childhood friend described him as mostly apolitical. And after Kirk was shot, one other member of the Discord said, quote, while Charlie Kirk's politics were not acceptable to some, I ask that we all say a prayer for him and his family during these confusing times. Now, Alyssa, I don't know how much time you or our listeners have spent on Discord chats. We have our, like, listeners'
no,
Discord.
I just do the safe one that's just us.
Right. But pray for the family of the famous person that was just murdered by somebody in this Discord chat. It's not something that is typical of the darker Discord chats. Like, that does not sound like some dark nihilism factory. It sounds like a place where people just got together and, like, talked about video games and life. So this diverges from an emerging narrative that school shooters have existed in dark, apolitical online forums that kind of host a tangle of nihilistic, nonsensical ideology. So, yeah, I just kind of wanted to talk about, like, the investigation of this case, the weaponization or, like, the seizing of the narrative about him, because apparently he hasn't said anything.
No, yeah, he says he's not cooperating.
Yeah, he says he's not cooperating. Alyssa, does it matter what his politics were? Like, and are people just going to run with whatever narrative they want regardless?
No, I mean, his politics don't really matter. I mean, it doesn't matter if it was someone from the far left or the far right who did it. The country is broken. And we have to, like, the thing that gets me when you think about this is that, you know, Charlie Kirk, and again, up until this, I really didn't know that much about Charlie Kirk. But after this happened, I was like, I want to know a little bit more. And so I spent a fair amount of time on Charlie Kirk's Instagram. And I watched quite a few of his Q&As that he did with people. And the one thing that you could say about him is that he was accessible, right? He was accessible. That day, he was there doing a Q&A with the audience taking questions. And so the thing that I think about is what happened to the shooter, what happened to Tyler Robinson that made him think that murder was the answer, right? Because he could have questioned him. He could have tried to engage with him. It's just, so it's like, I don't think that blaming anyone, I don't think that none of this can be broken down into this is only happening because of one specific ideology. There's a lot more going on that are causing people to do this kind of violence.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's happening because there's been a rise of political violence in this country for the last several years. And people who are motivated to do political violence have access to guns. That's why it's happening.
That's exactly it. I mean,
It's
talk about a mental health epidemic in this country, but weapons of war are readily available.
Something that has upset me about this is just the absolute feeding frenzy after the story broke to provide a justification for like ultraviolence on the left.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the day after it happened, there were all these threats called in to HBCUs.
Yes.
And, like, I think his political ideology only matters in as much as we can establish that he wasn't a product of the left. And that people who want to shoot people are not typical products of left-wing or progressive ideology. Not at this moment in this country. And it's just not – that's just not true. And it's something that the only person who would believe – that is true is a person that's really isolated from dealing mm-hmm. with anybody different from them, that is kind of siloed in whatever media bubble they're in, that mm-hmm. doesn't really bother to actually talk to any, leftists or progressives or doesn't think that anyone that they know could possibly be a leftist or a progressive or a Democrat. Like,
right.
It's really disturbing to me how hungry the administration was to just make this just about regular left-leaning people. They were hungry.
It was rabid. It was so disturbing. And, like, you know that for all the years I was in the White House, shootings and horrible things like this fell under my purview. How we responded, how the president, I traveled with the president to multiple shooting events in the aftermath. And never once, like, I get choked up thinking about this. Never once did he do anything, no matter who the shooter was, what they believed, what they found about them online. It was nothing but to calm the country, to say things would be okay, to say that we are better than this, and to watch a group of people who also recall, we just didn't have random administration officials firing shit off on Twitter. You know, it was a very different time. Mm-hmm. And so watching these people literally race to social media, to news interviews, taking to their podcast platforms to be like, this is war. Like the interview that J.D. Vance, the podcast interview J.D. Vance did with Stephen Miller, who has the same title I had in the White House, was so scary. The look in Stephen Miller's eyes when they said that they would like avenge what had happened, it was chilling. And I think that that is, even when presented, okay, in the absence of facts, one, but even when presented with facts, they don't pivot. They don't say, you know what, there's a loneliness epidemic. You know, people need to get out of the house, out of their basements. They need to get off their phones. They need to, like, interact with real people and understand that even if you disagree with someone, maybe they're not the fucking enemy. Mm-hmm. You know, this week, I think it was this week, there was a online reporter who went with Bernie Sanders to West Virginia. And Bernie Sanders met with all these Trump voters, all these MAGA folks. And like 90% of them left the meeting with Bernie being like, you're great. You know, all the things I've ever seen about you paint you as this XYZ. And I think it was just like just watching that just made me think that, like, you know, if there were so many ways that the administration could have honored Charlie Kirk. They all loved him. That's great. You can honor him without fomenting or creating an environment that is a permission structure for more violence.
Yeah. I mean, and let's talk a little bit about, like, the people that are the messengers in the aftermath of this. I feel like more than almost any other event, I feel like there's a lot of obfuscation going on and there's been a lot of shoehorning of things. And the way that Governor Cox and the way that, like, those text messages between the alleged shooter and the roommate that he was allegedly dating, they don't read like stuff that a 22-year-old would say. You know, like, the text messages themselves are like, well, I am a little disappointed that my old will be missing this gun. I best retract to my vehicle.
Like, right.
Why would you text vehicle and not car?
Car, truck, whatever.
Truck. Like, but car. Like, it just is very strange. And so, it occurred to me yesterday that I would not have been this distrusting of literally federal law enforcement agents.
Of course. Yeah.
Up until this point. Right? Like, I feel like it, you know, Donald Trump after 2020 called up the governor of Georgia and demanded he just needed 11,000 votes or whatever.
Oh,
you
right.
know,
yeah,
I just find me these votes. I wonder, that behavior makes me wonder if a call like that has gone out to Utah officials or to the FBI. Find me a trans story in this. Like, find me something that can justify a crackdown on people that are in one of our outgroups. Find me something. And it just feels like a fishing expedition, not an investigation. Like, they're not trying to get to the truth. And so we might never know what the truth is. And also, I got to say, before they'd even, like, apprehended him, or maybe it was right after they'd apprehended him, we didn't know anything about him, but Donald Trump was saying, like, on Fox News that he should get the death penalty and it should happen really fast. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, how is he going to get a fair trial now? Like, if I were that person's attorney, I would be like, all right, Sixth Amendment, it's your time. Yeah. You're up. Let's
change
the
venue to Canada.
Right. I mean, and like the DA who has to now, the DA was probably sitting there like, oh my God, dude.
Did you see the DA? I watched the whole press conference.
No, what did the DA say?
He's just like a gentle old man.
Oh no.
Like he's... This, because I think this was in Orem, Utah. Mm-hmm. Let's just say he did not have this on his bingo card rolling into 2025. And I felt like he was nervous. I felt for him.
I've been to Orem, Utah. It is like...
I'm sure you have. You're like the queen of Utah.
I'm the queen of Utah. Take that, Utah. I'm the queen of you. I'm invading you.
You are. But you know one thing that's... I'm going to go with like a smidge optimistic is that in Utah... The hearing will be televised, right?
I don't know enough about the ins and outs of the law. Maybe the judge would be like, I don't want that. Like, maybe the judge has an option. I'm not sure what the actual
maybe.
Law
yeah,
is.
Yeah, no,
in
I just
Utah.
I think historically they've.
But yeah,
there at least is that availability.
It's a possibility that it could be televised. Oh, good. Good. Donald Trump will love that. He'll probably show up to the trial and like sit in the front row like it's his.
Like he did to E. Jean.
Like it's his show. Yeah, so I mean, I think the thing that is the most, my biggest takeaway so far in this like tangle of like rumor and innuendo and theory and is that like it's really disturbing to live in a time of rising political violence, one, but then just kind of like the truth itself as a concept just being eroded and breaking down into these tinier and tinier pieces. And to the point where, like, when I saw a story where one of his alleged classmates spoke to a Fox News reporter, I was like, I don't trust that. Like, the classmate probably has an agenda. The Fox News reporter has an agenda. It's just, it's a really unfortunate time. This is why politics can't be part of everything.
Right.
Because
you should
be able to trust, I mean, you should be able to trust federal law enforcement. You should be able to trust, like, a bunch of these entities that now I find myself just knee-jerk. Like, yeah, fucking right, dude. I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Right.
All right. Speaking of people who shouldn't be investigating things or are trustworthy sources, I wouldn't trust this guy to find his own shoes in the morning, honestly.
Aaron, former podcaster, current FBI director Kash Patel is humiliating himself on the job every single day. We're not surprised. He behaves like he's an influencer, posting constantly, in complete contrast to the FBI's culture and standard of cautious and secure communication. Following the shooting, he provided a stream of updates announcing that a suspect was in custody and then that the suspect was released. Four former FBI officials told NBC News that the updates were premature, unnecessary, and undermined confidence in the Bureau. They also reported that just an hour after the shooting, he was dining at an elite New York institution, the original Rao's. Not a good look, Aaron.
It's hard to get a table there, though.
It's hard to get a table. Feels like in this instance, whoever he went with could have rescheduled, and he could have just been like, if everyone was so concerned about violence, it seems like he could have been operating from the FBI's New York headquarters and like talking to law enforcement.
Right. Like, I don't know if he needed to fly to Utah and like take the center stage looking like a deer in headlights.
No,
like,
he didn't.
Just like,
nobody needed that.
Yeah, nobody needed that. But
just out having some fucking manicot? I don't know.
No, I think that's the night you got to stay. You stay home. You postpone.
Do you? I mean, Aaron, I know it's a different time. But when bad things like this were going on, we didn't even want to go get takeout from the Thai restaurant in D.C. For fear that people would be like, this is happening and these assholes care about their pad Thai. Like, I mean, it's just, again, I know it's a different time, but the Rao's was really a like, today you had to?
Okay. Yeah. I'm just trying to picture like the equivalent, I think a way to kind of center and understand how fucked up and weird things are now is like, okay, imagine the equivalent happening, like the actual to the line equivalent happening under Obama. Like imagine if Sandy Hook happened and that night Hillary Clinton went out to a club.
No.
You know?
No, I cannot. It would never happen.
It would never happen. Well, he's also been testifying in front of the Senate Oversight
Committee. Yes, he has. Speaking of deer in headlights.
Oh, boy. Is it going well, Alyssa?
No, it's not going great. Basically, he just responds to every question with, like, I disagree with the premise of your question. And they're like, okay, so you do agree that X, Y, and Z. But there was one little nugget I found amongst the things I was reading about the hearing, and this was from Fox News, Aaron. This is from Fox News on September 14th. Quote, the White House, Bondi, and Blanche have no confidence in Patel. Pam, in particular, cannot stand him. Now, when asked for comment, the White House, Bondi, and Blanche deny plans to remove Patel, but that was where they left it. But I'm just saying, I feel like his days must be numbered.
I think that when it comes to Bush administration officials, it's not whether you're incompetent or stupid or whatever. It's like when you look dumb on camera to Fox News viewers enough times. Like, because you and I can watch, like, Kristi Noem cosplaying law enforcement.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
She's, like, you know, she's modeling for Spirit Halloween. And we can be like, that shit's corny. That's stupid. But a person who loves Fox News would be like, whoa, she's, look at this badass chick that looks like the, you know, whatever. But I think watching Patel kind of sputter and just not make any sense in front of Senate oversight. And then also, I think he said that he had read the Epstein files and that there was no evidence that anybody associated with Epstein had been trafficked,
yes,
which is a crazy thing to say.
It's crazy.
And then today in the hearing,
he was like, have I read it yet?
Yeah, Eric Swalwell questioned if Patel, or Kash Patel was asked during the hearing about the files again, and he said he actually has not reviewed
Aaron,
the entirety.
Here's the thing. Do none of them, like, is the quiet part perhaps true? Do none of them read? Because Pam had those, she had those files for months, and she's like, they're on my desk, gonna get to it. And then, like, months later, she's like, well, I didn't, there's nothing in them.
Unless she never had the files and was told to say that she had the files, and so is Kash Patel, because whatever is in them is so damaging that nobody can read them who hasn't already read them, and people who have already read them.
And they've driven us to these conspiracy theories.
You know what?
They keep changing their stories.
They've got all three branches of government. They've got so many state houses. They've got so many governorships. We get conspiracies. We get the custody of conspiracies now. It's for the left. They're going to require more book reading. They're going to be really fun. They're going to involve, like, long historical tangents from, like, professor-type people, Rachel Maddow-type tangents.
My kind. That's my cup of tea.
So, actually, it was funny. Yesterday in the office, one of our colleagues came up to me and was like, oh, you know who should be your next fucking guy? Kash Patel. And I was like, well, I'm already working on somebody else. And secondly, like, will he last long enough for the video to be, like, written?
Is he worth it?
I mean, maybe. We did one on we've done some on people that I'm like, well, that's kind of small potatoes, and then it's turned out to be a cathartic exercise.
That's, I mean, you know.
You know, but stay
chronicling
tuned.
His podcast history turned FBI director.
You know what? There are no podcasters in Valhalla. I say this as a podcaster. We're not going to the place where the Vikings who die glorious deaths on the battlefield go. We are talking into microphones. We are arguing with the mirror. We are not. The Valkyries will not be selecting us. And I don't mean the basketball team. I mean the terrifying Nordic warriors. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got more news. Mm. Hysteria is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. Fall is planting season. Don't trust the propaganda about it being spring with all those, like, you know, ads.
This is the perfect time for trees.
Perfect time for trees. Mm-hmm. And you also should be getting your yard ready for next year. I know where I live, a lot of the plants that are native they want to be cold for a while. They want to be wet for a while.
Yep.
And then their roots will take a lot better. So this is the time.
This is the time. We're overseeding here. We're overseeding our native meadow. We are planting two new trees because they like to just go dormant and then, like, kick back open in spring.
Well, it's also, like, important to know where to start. And that's why I really love fastgrowingtrees.com. It doesn't matter if you live in the sunny south or if the air is getting chilly where you are. If you are in one of those places where it's getting chilly, I am jealous of you. Their plant experts can help you find the perfect fit for your space. They have all the plants your yard needs, like fruit trees, privacy trees, flowering trees, shrubs, and so much more.
Fast-growing trees makes it easy to get your dream yard. Order online and get your plants delivered directly to your door in just a few days without ever leaving home. Their Alive and Thrive guarantee ensures your plants arrive happy and healthy. All the plants and trees are locally grown in the U.S., ensuring they will thrive in your yard.
I have to say, in a world that feels very chaotic, gardening and taking care of like a lawn or taking care, a lawn, the ground in front of your house, whatever.
Right, right.
That makes you feel like a sense of happiness.
Pride.
Like, yeah, pride, accomplishment.
100%.
And like in addition to being just looking nice and adding some shade and making your house feel a little more like your home, it also is just like, it's nice. I like
it's special.
It's special. And you know what? It's special and it's helpful if you have somebody guiding you so that you're not killing everything.
Right. Right.
Because that is demoralizing.
Yes. Right.
That is demoralizing. So big yard, small yard, no yard. We've got over 6,000 plants to fit any space, from indoor plants to fruit trees to full-size privacy trees and more. Their 14-point quality checklist ensures you're getting the best quality plants possible. Each plant is cared for individually based on its needs, from watering routines to the amount of sunlight, giving your plants the care they deserve from the time they start growing to when they ship to your home.
Erin, you can talk to a plant expert about your soil type, landscape design, how to take care of your plants, and everything else you need. No green thumb is required. Imagine the frustration of bringing new plants home from the store just to see them die in days or weeks. Wanting to get into plants gardening but have no experience? Their website has all the information you need, and every plant comes with instructions and tips to care for your new plant.
This fall, they have the best deals for your yard, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get 15% off their first purchase when using code Hysteria at checkout. That's 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code Hysteria at checkout. Now's the perfect time to plant. Use Hysteria to save today. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Check out the link below or in the show notes and support the show. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that will buy whoever projected that image of Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein on the side of Windsor Castle a drink. We will buy you a drink once you get out of jail. I know there's four of you. We'll splurge.
It's pretty good.
Send us your Venmo. We'll buy you a drink. Here's from the NBC News report regarding the incident where, as I mentioned, an image of Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein was projected on the side of Windsor Castle. The projections included photos of Trump and Epstein and of the two joined by First Lady Melania Trump, with Epstein and his co-conspirator Ghislaine Maxwell, and of a lewd birthday message Trump allegedly sent Epstein in 2003 for a 50th birthday book. No Prince Andrew.
Low-hanging fruit.
Come on. I think that, like, if you would have done that in the UK, you would have gotten in, like, bigger trouble, though.
Maybe. I feel like they're not really that much for Prince Andrew.
Maybe Prince Andrew did it. He was like, yeah.
He's like, nothing to see here.
This guy was his best friend, not me. I was just Ghislaine's best friend. It's totally different. Thames Valley Police said in a statement Tuesday night that they arrested four adults on suspicion of malicious communications following a public stunt in Windsor. I love that. I love imagining that in a posh British accent. Malicious communications. The police added that they will conduct an investigation into the incident and that all four people arrested remain in custody.
Hmm.
Good for them.
Free the funny four.
Free the funny four, indeed.
So, Erin, just a quick update on the story that we mentioned in our last show. Last week, Chuck Schumer made a surprise attempt to force a vote demanding the Justice Department release the Jeffrey Epstein files. The Senate voted 51-49 to table the measure, with two Republicans, Rand Paul and Josh Hawley, voting across party lines. Though this attempt for release failed, Schumer said it still succeeded in drawing attention to the fact that Republicans do not want the files released, though some Republicans did say they simply objected to the vehicle. For example, Senator Tom Tillis said that if the matter came to the floor in a legitimate way, he would vote to make the Epstein files public, quote, in a heartbeat.
Okay. Is he trying to have his Epstein no vote and eat it too?
I don't know, but Erin, he may be called on it, because right now the bipartisan House effort to force a vote on releasing files is at 218, only one vote short. So the House has a non-zero chance of passing after the special election in Arizona to fill the vacant seat of Raul Grijalva. His daughter, Adelita, also a Democrat, is expected to win the seat. Massey, Boebert, MTG, and Nancy Mace have all signed on.
Well, the fearsome foursome. Look at
strange bedfellows, right? But several other Republicans have been calling for the release of the files who have not even signed on. When asked, Senate Majority Leader John Thune said, "What I can tell you is I believe the transparency is always best, and you get as much information out there as you possibly can in a way that protects the rights of victims. I'm all for transparency and disclosure," he told reporters. So it looks like Republicans will get all the chances possible to show how transparent they really want to be.
I mean, this stuff isn't going away.
No.
Epstein thing is not going away.
No.
Because there are enough people in this country who are in positions of power who are like, you know what? Child sexual abuse, I'm going to go ahead and say we should probably get as much out there about who did it as possible, right?
Right.
Like, we shouldn't be protecting people implicated in child sexual abuse crimes. But then there are people who are like, you know what? I hate child sexual abuse if and only if it makes Democrats look bad. And that to me is like a
shameful and true.
A deep sickness. You are like sick in the soul. Mm-hmm. If you are like, oh, well, it might make my guy look bad, so actually I can look the other way.
Like, I mean, to those people, I wish Olivia Benson haunts them like the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future.
Mm-hmm. And, like, there's a drip, drip, drip of information continuing to come out. Like, we've gotten stuff from the Epstein estate just last week.
Right.
We got the birthday book. Was that last week or a couple weeks ago?
I think it was 2 weeks ago.
What is time?
What is time?
Last week?
When a president's signature is used to represent pubic hair, what is time?
I don't know. It was last week before the Troubles. We also got a cache of 18,000 emails from Jeffrey Epstein's inbox.
Yeah.
Many of them were from Ghislaine Maxwell. They were besties. This is just going to continue to come out, and everything that comes out is grosser.
Yeah, it's not getting better. Nothing's coming out that's like, this has been overblown.
Yeah, no. Nothing's coming out where you're like, oh, well, that explains everything.
That makes perfect sense. No. It gets creepier and creepier and grosser and grosser.
Right, and it's like, people, an ambassador, a UK ambassador, that ended up being relieved of his duties a couple weeks ago because he was like distraught when Jeffrey Epstein was in legal trouble for hurting children. Like, mm-hmm. it's still unfolding, and it's a huge story. This is the story that sent me down the path of ending up at Candace Owens, I have to say. Jeffrey Epstein, Candace Owensified me for this week. All right. There will be more Epstein, you know, tomorrow, the next day.
For you next week.
The next day. You're listening to Epstein-steria. Okay, so let's do a quick hit on something that doesn't have to do with Jeffrey Epstein. Redistricting in California. There's going to be a special election on November 4th for Californians to vote on Proposition 50, which would authorize the state to use a new congressional district map for 2026 through 2030. We are a hard yes on this.
Mm-hmm.
Every California listener, you are a hard yes. You are going out to vote on November 4th, and you are voting yes on Prop 50, and you are telling everyone to also vote yes on Prop 50. And that's how we're getting this across the finish line. This could give Democrats the opportunity to pick up 9 additional seats during the midterm election, which would neutralize Texas's 5 new seats. This unprecedented mid-cycle redistricting is all a part of Newsom's fight fire with fire strategy against Republicans. The prop has significant Democratic support, including endorsements from Obama and Kamala Harris. A leader in the conservative opposition is Berkshire Hathaway heir Charles Munger Jr., who has already spent $30 million trying to stop redistricting. I've gotten some of his little letters in the mail, Alyssa.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I get them like a couple times a week, and I kind of want to just be like, stop bringing these to me. Like, don't, like, this is part of a tree. This used to be part of a living
thing.
Right,
unsubscribe. Save the tree.
I know. It's just, sometimes my mail is just like, here, here's some stuff for you to throw in the trash.
I know.
And that's one of the things. Munger worked with Arnold Schwarzenegger during his governorship to reform redistricting and put the decision in the hands of an independent commission. Schwarzenegger has also condemned the prop. And now Munger is furious to see his work reversed, albeit temporarily. It's literally for two elections.
Right.
Right? And though he claims his concerns are beyond party divides, he also just so happens to be a Republican. So
here's a question. You said you've gotten the Munger mail. Have you been also getting pro Prop 50 mail? Like, do you feel like they're doing as good a job getting the word out?
No. I have not gotten anything that's pro Prop 50 at all.
Really? Are there commercials on TV?
I don't really watch TV that has commercials. It's pretty much like all Spidey and his amazing friends, like Disney Jr.
Oh, right. Fair.
But I will let you know if I see one next time I watch local news.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah. For more information or to get involved, head to votesaveamerica.com/prop50. All right. Another quick hit.
Ugh. Earlier this year, Aaron, the Trump administration announced that the State Department the State Department planned to destroy $10 million worth of taxpayer-funded contraceptives that were meant for low-income women abroad. This followed Trump's larger-scale dismantling of foreign aid projects. Just the sheer fact that he's like, let it burn. Like, nobody on the planet should use it. It is just, like, it's so wasteful. Think of all the things that, I mean, anyway. The stockpile of IUDs, implants and pills was stuck in a warehouse in the Flanders region of Belgium. The destruction of these goods was estimated to cost $167,000 alone. On Thursday, the Trump administration told the New York Times the destruction was complete. However, just a day later, Belgian officials debunked that claim in the response to the Times, stating that the stock was still all there in the warehouse. Flanders has a ban on incinerating still usable medical products, good for them, and officials have actually been hoping to facilitate a sale of the contraceptives rather than destruction. Documents obtained by the New York Times show that multiple organizations, including the Gates Foundation and the Children's Investment Fund Foundation, attempted to purchase the supply. Sell it! What the fuck? Why? This is so dumb. This is among the dumbest. Why did Doge exist if they won't even sell the $10 million worth of contraceptives to people who are willing to pay America for them?
Well, you know what this means, Alyssa.
What?
It's time for Ocean's 14, a heist movie about how 14 friends and associates and ne'er-do-wells unite to pull off the biggest heist of IUDs the world has ever seen.
Honestly, send in who would be great. I don't know. This feels like maybe, I don't know, someone wonderful. Lucy Liu. Send someone in. They have to do this.
Lucy Liu.
I don't know. She felt like she could get into that. I'm picturing the guy who snuck into the vault in Ocean's 11, and I'm like, she's very thin and wiry. The thing that makes me so mad about this is like the second iteration, because they did something similar to this back in February with ready-to-use therapeutic foods. So the protein and the protein-packed, like, peanut butter that's, like, fortified peanut butter. Mm-hmm. It was fortified peanut butter meant for malnourished children abroad. And they cut the contracts. Companies here that had been producing it were about to go bankrupt because they had already produced all of this that USAID had purchased. And then Trump was like, no, you're fucked. And then they wanted to sell it, and the government wasn't going to let them. And then there was just, like, pallets of it that were about to go bad instead of just being sent to the countries that could use them to save millions of kids from starving to death. And, you know, it's just like, it's just so fucking gross. And it's just also such a joke for all that we had to endure with Doge, because all of these things are just utter wastes of money.
Also, the lying about it is really weird.
So weird.
Like
it's gone.
Oh, we burned it. We wrecked it. Are you triggered? Aren't you triggered?
Oh,
it's like, I mean,
it's like, no, you're stupid. You're frivolous.
I mean, but that's another thing. It's like, oh, you can't even trust them to tell the truth about that. They literally lie about everything. Lies
everything.
All the way down. And it's like, I don't know what's real. Like, it's Schrodinger's contraceptives. You know, are they burned? Are they not burned? Like, it's I trust the Belgian authorities more than I trust American authorities.
Yeah,
and that's why the conspiracies are all ours now, right? That's why
we own them.
We get custody of the conspiracies. Now let's wrap this block up with some good news. New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham announced her plans last week to remove the state's income eligibility limit for free childcare starting November 1st. The Universal Child Care Guarantee will cover infants and toddlers until they age into public preschool. This move makes New Mexico the first state ever to promise free childcare to families, and this follows a policy from earlier this year that offered low-interest loans for the construction of new childcare facilities. The state is still working on expanding capacity to meet demand and ironing out rules of this new policy, but it's a huge win for sure. Let's be more like New Mexico.
I love it.
I mean, it's also like a lower cost of living state in general compared to, you know, like other blue states. New Mexico is like a more affordable, like if you're not living in Santa Fe, if you're not trying to be like Oprah's neighbor,
right?
You could, like, it's more affordable to have a house. It's, you know, your child care is free. Like it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. But like, I have a pitch for states. I have a pitch. As marijuana becomes legal for recreational sale, let's use that revenue. Let's use all that revenue. Aaron, do you know that since the recreational sale of weed has been legal in Colorado for 10 years, do you know that in those 10 years they have made over $3 billion in fees and revenue, and they've put it into schools and stuff? So what if all the states that are going legal are like, we're going to take a portion of this, because you don't need all of it, to free healthcare? I think that's a fucking win-win.
Absolutely. Also, yeah, it's kind of funny to imagine like smoking a joint or eating an edible and being like, I'm eating a school right now.
I'm doing good work. I am contributing to societal goods. I mean, I just think it's great. I think
so
that's
in a way,
what should happen.
Wake and bake is helpful. Everybody should be doing it.
Everyone should wake and bake. Look what you're doing. You could fund. Think of like, I don't know. I think that as we all have things that need fixing, but we all know that if we start with kids, there are just better outcomes when you invest them at a young age. So I say weed revenue for childcare.
Absolutely. All right. Alyssa for governor of New Mexico, although their current governor is doing a good job. So
yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, when she's done.
I just hope Kathy Hochul's listening to me, since weed just became recreational in New York like a couple years ago.
Use it for schools. You hear that, Kathy? And go Bills. Fine. Go Bills.
Go Bills. Go Bills. All right. Bills Mafia.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about an article that we haven't stopped thinking about for weeks. Hysteria is brought to you by Hiya. You know what, Alyssa?
Tell me.
I have the pickiest child in the world.
Sassy pants.
The pickiest one, gold medalist. If there was a picky eating Olympics, she would be the Simone Biles of those. She would just clean up.
Well, we all have to be good at something, Aaron.
Chicken nuggets? No way, man. Like,
no way.
She will sometimes take like a little nibble out of a nugget, and I consider that a victory. But last night, I had to tell her that if she didn't eat her mac and cheese, I was going to give it to her little sister, who's one, and that if she didn't eat food for long enough and the little sister ate more, then she would turn back into a baby and the little sister would get bigger than her.
That's incredible.
And
that
she
is
did
genius.
Eat her mac and cheese, but I don't like having to lie about science to my child to get her to eat. I mean, I honestly consider myself lucky that Hiya vitamins exist.
Thank
because
God.
I think her body is 95% Hiya vitamins at this point. She is the pickiest child, and she absolutely loves her Hiya vitamins. And I can feel good giving them to her because they have what she needs.
Doesn't she have a special little name for them?
She calls them Alphaba vitamins.
Alphaba vitamins.
Some of them they're green, pink, and yellow.
Right.
And so green and pink are like Alphaba and Glinda from Wicked.
Right.
And yellow, I don't know what that stands for. Maybe the Yellow Brick Road. I don't know. Typical children's vitamins are basically candy in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my daughter loves candy. She would eat candy all day if she could. But this is not candy. This does not have sugar, unhealthy chemicals, or other gummy additives. Hiya's chewable children's vitamin is great. It does what it's supposed to do. It tastes great. It's perfect for picky eaters. It's non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, nut-free, and everything else that you can imagine. Every single batch is third-party tested for heavy metals and microbials in a qualified GMP-compliant lab using scientifically validated testing methods, so you know the product is safe and nutritious. Hiya is designed for kids 2 and up and sent straight to your door, so parents have one less thing to worry about. And are you tired of battling with your kid to eat their greens? Am I?
Are you?
I am. It is a daily argument. Hiya has kids' daily greens and superfoods, a chocolate-flavored greens powder designed specifically for kids, packed with 55-plus whole food ingredients to support brain power, development, and digestion. Just scoop, shake, and sip with milk or any non-dairy beverage for a delicious and nutritious boost your kids will actually enjoy. In my house, that is called Power Milk.
Power Milk. Mm-hmm. Don't we all need some?
We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, you must go to hiyahealth.com/hysteria. This deal is not available on their regular website. Go to hiyahealth.com/hysteria and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who sometimes like to doom scroll the old-fashioned way with a newspaper.
I do. I like to take my trusty green pen and scroll the paper.
Yeah, right. And it's like doom, but slower, and there isn't a light on it that makes you crazy. You know, like
yeah.
Your phone.
Sometimes a nice ad breaks it up.
Right. You're not messing up your circadian rhythm if you're just sitting there reading the paper before bed.
Totally.
Okay, we're going to talk about a story that like really. Kind of, it popped when it came out, and we didn't get around to talking about it. This month, Wired published a story about a surrogacy arrangement gone horribly wrong. It's a long and worthwhile read, again, if you want to just, like, end by being like, what the fuck? But the short of it is that a woman went to extreme lengths to harass and ultimately sue her surrogate after the surrogate endured a harrowing pregnancy and stillbirth. The article highlights the dangers of power imbalances that can occur during a surrogacy arrangement and the ways the industry remains unregulated and driven by greed. The viral story inspired us to get into discussions surrounding the complex and under-discussed issue of surrogacy. All right, this is a little bit of a thorny topic, but Alyssa, like, what did you think of the article?
I was really troubled by it. I was mostly troubled by how little I knew. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to be 50 years old. I don't have kids. There's no reason I would know that much about it. But the thing about this article was that it is the darkest, like it felt to me like such a dark part of society that we just don't know enough about. I mean, when we talk about the woman, the intended parent by and the gestational carrier, mm-hmm. Smith, the way the scrutiny, these were the things that stuck out to me. The gestational carrier, of course, has to go through so many checks and balances, right? You want to make sure this person is good. There's like almost no scrutiny on the people who are trying to hire her, the intended parents. Mm-hmm. And what you find at the end of the article is that there were like a lot of fucking issues with the intended parent who maybe shouldn't have been able to engage in a relationship with a gestational carrier. Like it was the trauma that this woman will have undergone. So she gets into a relationship with this woman by. There are contracts in place. There are, like, one of the things is that by is not to identify this woman on social media by name or anything, which she does. The Smith has no recourse. Like, that was the thing that I had not really thought about until I read this article, that no matter what, at the end of the 9 months, no matter what's happened between the two parties, the baby born is always the property of the intended parent. That was crazy. I did not realize how much of even outside the baby, like one of the issues in this article is an issue with the placenta in mm-hmm. Smith, and that so many of the issues that she had were actually related to the DNA of the intended parents. Mm-hmm. And she was not made aware of any of the potential complications that, I mean, it was the what this woman has suffered. The other thing that I thought was crazy is that Smith was at a job when this started that had insurance. Her insurance was going to cover her even though she was acting as a surrogate, and it would help cover her medical expenses, etc. When she went to change jobs, she made it clear to the surrogacy agency, like she seems to have followed all the checks and balances. What happened, though, because of the change in insurance, it sent the intended parent into outer orbit. She starts calling this woman's job and her insurance, and they're having conversations with her. I just didn't understand, like, how with HIPAA that's, like, a thing, like, how you can do that. Mm-hmm. But she has basically sued this woman into oblivion for having a stillbirth, which she says was her fault, which there is no evidence of the fact that it is her fault. And this woman's life may be completely ruined because of it. And I thought it was, I had no idea how unregulated it was. I mean, this was actually, this what made this interesting to me is that this was actually kind of like best case scenario in terms of regulation and going through an agency and having as many checks and balances in place as is possible. But it was very eye-opening to me. I read it when it came out, and then I read it again this morning. It was shocking to me.
Yeah, I mean, surrogacy is, you know, I have a moral issue with surrogacy. I think that there's something that is kind of hard to overcome about the power imbalance between a person, like, basically, like, renting a person's body.
Right.
Like, I can't go out and sell one of my kidneys, even if I wanted to. You know, I can't go out and, like, you know, start the bidding on my heart if I die. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I can't.
Right, of course.
I can't do that. And, like, this is a way that people can sell their bodies and they can basically have their bodies being, like, essentially, like, taken over by somebody else who tries to, like, who views their bodies as their property during the course mm-hmm. of the pregnancy.
Right.
Which is, like, I don't know. You don't make that much money as a surrogate.
No.
It's like
I was shocked by that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I think, look, I don't think anyone's doing surrogacy to get rich, you know?
Like, yeah.
But I still did think there'd be more of an upside.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like, the reason that it's, like, a little bit thorny is because there are people who cannot have or carry their own children, and sometimes surrogacy is the way that they're able to have, like, a child that's biologically related to them. Mm-hmm. But is that moral and justifiable given the risks that it poses to the bodies of surrogate or, like, gestational carriers? Something that I learned from the article is it's like an eightfold increase in a risk of certain very dangerous pregnancy outcomes. Pregnancy is already pretty dangerous. In America, mm-hmm. if you are a pregnant woman, your life is like more in danger than if you are a cop that is on duty. Like,
right.
It is a dangerous thing to be pregnant, just biologically speaking, because our bodies are, like, really fucking bad at being pregnant and having kids. Like, it's crazy that our species, like, exists. But it's a huge risk. It's a huge, like, physical burden on a gestational carrier, even if it's something that she really wants to do. It's, like, a risky thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of like, I don't know. I mean, in the U.S., it's, the surrogacy industry is worth $22.4 billion, and it's forecasted to grow to a $200 billion industry over the next 10 years. And, like, that is not – that does not feel good to me, like, especially with a, like, increasing stratification and, like, a bigger gap between people who have money and people who don't.
In something that's so wildly unregulated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's – I mean, the ways in which – you learn throughout the process of this story that Smith was vulnerable to the lawsuits that she ended up being engaged in because of this. I mean, it's like there are so many trap doors that, you know, I think you assume, or I assume, that if you want a child so badly, that this is a financially available option for you, that you want to set everyone up for success. And this was just, I mean, it was the one of the things that was so crazy is that the woman who was the intended parent, the stress she heaped on this woman. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a small issue about the insurance, and it says that the day that that Smith ended up having to go to the emergency room, she had received something like 54 text messages about this. And I feel like, you know, for me, like, I do, because I don't have kids, you meet people like you, right? So I know a lot of people who have done surrogacy and or who thought about it. And, you know, I think a lot of them were just like, didn't do it because they felt like it was too unregulated and that there's just too much chance that something could go really sideways. And I feel like this article was the embodiment. Also, at the end, the thing that was bonkers that I had never considered is that one of the things that Bi talks about is how she believes that a model for surrogacy is in the anti-abortion lobby, and that in the surrogacy of every in the vein of surrogacy, that the baby's life should always be put first. I think that's terrifying.
That, no, I'm sorry. No, oh my God, that's horrible. That, yeah. It's very like, you know, I know everything gets compared to Handmaid's Tale, but Handmaid's Tale itself was written based on the way that women have been treated and are being treated in the world. And so that's why there's so many comparisons to it that still exist. But it's like, there's something that really, like, surrogacy is expensive in the U.S., right? Mm-hmm. And it's cheaper if you go abroad. And I met a woman once who was utilizing a surrogate in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, so then it becomes this really, like, a global issue. I know that, like, in Nepal and India, there are surrogacy houses. And I know that after the giant earthquake in Kathmandu in 2015, I want to say, that some wealthy couples who had were utilizing Nepali surrogates sent helicopters to fly the babies out.
Yes. I remember that.
Yeah. It's like, it's so gross. Like, the body that produces the baby is both the most important and the most scorned element of this. And it's just, it's such a microcosm of the way that we view, like, not to be all woo-woo, but it's such a, like, microcosm of the way we view, like, birth and pregnancy.
Oh, absolutely.
In general. Like, I feel like we don't understand it fully. And, like, I mean, having had two kids, like, I've learned a lot about pregnancy, and a thing I've learned about pregnancy is doctors who've spent their entire careers working with pregnant women don't know very much about pregnancy. It is, like, it is so mysterious. There are so many factors at play. Like, we recently learned that if you carry a baby to a certain point in gestation, that their DNA, whether or not that baby's ever born, their DNA, like, lives in your body, like, forever.
Really?
Yeah. And, like, so that's why, like, some people...
That's a little spooky.
I know. It's very spooky. So, like, you know, even if you, like, God forbid, suffer a miscarriage or something, that baby is still, like, a part of you. And any subsequent babies you, like, carry meet that baby in utero. It's, like, so spooky. So, like, if you have three kids, the youngest one comes out having already basically met kid two.
That's bananas.
Kid one. Yeah. They've, like, hung out. Their blood's hung out, or, like, their DNA is hung out. You know what I mean?
It's so, kind of like the equivalent. I can't believe I'm going to say this. It's like the equivalent of, like, when you get a new cat and you have another cat and you, like, take their hair and you smell it to desensitize them.
That's exactly what it's like, Alyssa.
Right? But, like, in your belly.
That's exactly what it's like. But we're also learning things that are about, like, the importance of birth, mother, and child bonding.
Yeah.
And, like, and how like, adoption at birth can actually be, like, pretty... traumatic for both parties involved. Like, it maybe isn't in the best interest of the baby to have them taken away from their birth mother right away. Like, and definitely not in the best interest of the mother, because those two are basically, like, tethered early in their lives. So, like, you know, what we're doing with surrogacy is we're putting, in many cases, non-genetically related material into the uterus of a gestational carrier, subjecting her to higher amounts of risk. And then also, like, we don't know what this does to, like, the baby long term. This is, like, it's very hard to study pregnancy ethically. It's very hard to study, like, to have experiments that are involving, like, fetuses, because it's, like, not ethical. But, like, what we can say is there's a lot of things we don't know about, like, how safe this is for both the gestational carrier and for the resulting baby. And, like, I don't, like, want to be judgmental. I do want to be judgmental. I think that there are, like, I think that surrogacy should be something that is so regulated that you have to jump through just as many hoops in order to use a surrogate as you would to, like, adopt a human baby. And there should
be
more hoops to adopt a human baby as well, because you are directly, like, taking custody or, like, taking a vested interest in somebody else's body.
Right. Well, and also, if in the world we lived in, a woman's value wasn't so tied to whether or not she's had kids, you know, like, I think that there are a lot of people, and I know people who just were, like, so desperate to have a baby. It was something that was so important to them. But, like, for me, it wasn't anything that was, like, it didn't control my thoughts. You know what I mean? Like, I would think about it, but it wasn't something that overwhelmed me. But I had thought about it, you know, like mm-hmm. when I was like, well, I don't have any egg, but I don't know, would this ever work? But it's like, but I thought about it at the time because I'm like, am I going to be a nobody if I never have kids?
Oh,
do you know
God.
What I mean? Like, no, but that's what the world does to you. And so mm-hmm. I think that like maybe if we changed how we talked about things, which in the current political landscape where it's like, if you don't have kids, you shouldn't even have a vote, you mm-hmm. know, it's not going to make surrogacy safer if that sort of, you know, campaign takes foot.
Yeah. And then sometimes there are things that are like completely outside of somebody's control that make them like physically incapable of carrying
of
children. Like I have a couple of friends that like shortly after they got together, they were like testing to see like if they were fertile. They were like seeing a fertility doctor and the fertility doctor was like, you both have cancer. And like they,
fuck.
Yeah. So they had to like make a bunch of embryos real quick, like before they got cancer treatment and then they had to use a surrogate. And so like, that's a situation where I'm like, okay, I totally understand it. When it comes to like celebrities who are like, I just don't want to be pregnant. I don't know how I can find that justifiable.
Well, the one thing that I did think was interesting in this story was that the agency that they brokered the surrogacy through would only do it for people with medical necessity.
Mm.
You know, now we've learned through Maha that getting a letter from your doctor that says, we're afraid Alyssa's going to get a pimple if she gets the COVID vaccine, suffices as medical excuse. But
right.
I did find that part of the, like, process in this, I was like, oh, well, at least there are some places where you have to, like, medically prove that this is something you could not possibly do on your own.
Mm-hmm. But then outside of the borders of the U.S., it's like the Wild West. Like, if you
right.
have enough money,
absolutely.
If you've got the will and, like, enough money to buy a house in a developing country, in the global south, you can probably find a gestational carrier, subject their body to, like, untold risk, and then just, like, forget about them forever. Just, you know, forget about
it's
them forever.
It's crazy.
I think something that we should also kind of maybe round this conversation out with is, like, mm-hmm. the only reason we know about this fucking crazy story
oh.
is because— Bi spoke out to Wired.
Yes.
I don't know why. People only talk to the press when they think it will benefit them. I don't know what calculus she did to be like, this is going to do it.
Because, Erin, she seems completely unwell.
Yeah.
Like, that whole article, I mean, I am surprised. We know in this article that she is married. Her husband should have stepped in front of this, this freight train because mm-hmm. she— You know, she seems deeply unwell.
Yeah. I mean, there's also one of our producers just pointed out that this is the only way to have biological kids for some LGBTQ families.
Of course.
This is going to sound like very harsh and mean, and I mm-hmm. don't mean it to be harsh and mean. I don't think people are entitled to have biological children. I just don't. I think
okay.
that, like— I think that altruistic surrogacy, there is a solution where like surrogacy is something that like friends arrange between each other
mm-hmm.
or something that it's like somebody you have a family member you have a close relationship with that maybe could like help lessen the risk, the genetic risk on like the gestational carrier. But I just think in general, I don't think that it is justifiable. I don't think that the risk that surrogates are being subject to is justifiable by the fact that somebody wants to have their own kid.
Okay.
I know that's harsh. I'm probably going to get a lot of mean messages about it, but that's kind of how I feel.
Okay.
I also think adoption should just give the moms money instead of like adopting the babies out. I think that like, and also like, again, what you said about having kids, like, I think that having children is not the only way to be fulfilled or happy. And that messaging that goes out to people, especially women, that's like, your life can be happy as long as you are choosing it, is like maybe something that we should try to do a little bit more. Like,
yeah,
I would have been happy if I didn't have kids. I would be like climbing mountains and running marathons and shit instead of
you
what
would.
I'm doing
that's
now,
what
which
you
is
were
like
doing.
Sleeping 5 hours a night. But look, you know what? I love them. I'm glad they're here. But it's not, like, fun. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And my life changed.
I get that.
And who I am changed. And, like, I just, there's not just one way to live a good life that is fulfilling and, like, full of love and community and friendship. And I just hope, like, that Bi somehow gets, I don't know. I don't want to say like punishment because I think that she's obviously like hurt by what happened.
Well, I hope she doesn't get another surrogate.
I hope she doesn't get another
Jesus
surrogate.
Christ. I hope that if this article does nothing else, it stops in its tracks whatever, you know, because she talks about in it that like she's sued so many people. She, like, she's spent so much money on suing Smith that, you know, she doesn't know if she can afford another surrogate. And it's like, well, that is a fucking blessing.
Yeah. I mean, yes, that is the upside of this story. And, you know, I don't know, it's a thorny topic when we talk about, like, gestational carriers and the bodies that make people, which are always, that's what the female body is. Like, mm-hmm. there's always, you cannot erase the female body from the process of, like, having a child. And I think that sometimes surrogacy in its current unregulated, exploitative state does at its worst, at its medium, bad. I think at its mm-hmm. best, it can be really beautiful and it can be great for the surrogate. I know people who really like being pregnant. You know, there's not that many of them, but there are people who really like doing that, who really want to do that for somebody, and good for them. But I think that in a world of increasing desperation and economic stratification, mm-hmm. Unless we start kind of like trying to make an actual legal path that is like strict right. and enforced, then things are just going to get bleaker and there's going to be more stories like this. And we're only going to find out about them, you know, in secret whispers because people are going to be scared of getting sued.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sani Petty. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that will not be reading the YouTube comments this week. Or any week. No, some weeks I venture in. If I get like a text from one of my friends and they're like, oh, it was so fun, then I'll like...
I've never read the YouTube comments.
Venture in. Oh, I've like read some TFG ones. Usually people are really nice. We really like you. Our listeners are great. And usually when they have like a quibble with us, it's like a respectful...
It's respectful. Like, that's true.
Yeah. Like not all my opinions are correct. I mean, they are 99% correct. No, but it's like, it's good to just be given, like you and I, Alyssa, are both people that like when more information is presented to us or a different perspective is presented to us, we're like, oh, you know what? That's interesting information. I will incorporate it into my worldview.
It is. Yes. I feel like what that is like, it is a gift to have a brain that can grow and learn.
Yeah. I mean, not that many people have it though.
No, but we do.
We do. Thank goodness.
We do.
Okay. Before we get into Sani Petty, some announcements for the class. Okay. Hysteria Hive, in case you missed it, we just never called you guys that ever. But,
ever.
Okay. Hysteria Nest. That's somehow grosser. We just released our new collegiate style Hysteria sweatshirt to show your petty pride. That's right. Get cozy this fall. Alyssa is wearing the t-shirt version of it.
So cute.
It's
love
so
it.
Cute. We're reclaiming that style from the frat bros. It's ours now. Also, those hoodies, the sweatshirts, are so cozy.
They're so cozy.
Like, if you are a woman who dates men, do not let a man steal it from you. It is like something a man would steal. You can share.
Perfect.
In a
you
nice
can share, but it's yours.
It's yours. Do not let it. It's definitely going to like reverse the girlfriend stealing boyfriend hoodie trend. This fall. Head on over to crooked.com/store to shop. Now let's get to Sani Petty. Alyssa, here's what I'm feeling a little Sani and a little petty about this week.
Okay.
Okay. Elizabeth Gilbert, the author of Eat, Pray, Love.
Oh, yeah. She's been everywhere.
She's got a new book out.
She is everywhere.
After she wrote Eat, Pray, Love, I think a lot of people would have recommended to her to call it a day. You know,
right,
go out
right.
on a win. Like, it didn't necessarily, you know, it sparked a lot of conversation. It was like a, you know, a runaway hit. A movie resulted from it. You know, it sparked conversations about like self-indulgence and what is self-affirmation, self-growth versus self-indulgence. And I think that it ended up being like a neutral component of mass culture at the mm-hmm. time. Right. I'm being generous. I didn't love it. Wasn't for me, though, you know.
I mean, it never crossed my transom, as they would say.
Yeah. All right. Well, she's got a new book out. The memoir is called All the Way to the River. It was released this week. people don't like it. The Guardian published a review, and I think it called it an excruciating read.
Excruciating read, yeah.
And I was like, are you just dunking on Elizabeth Gilbert because it's fun to dunk on Elizabeth Gilbert? Like, there's a few, like, media figures that are sort of, like, so high on their own supply that, like, yeah. when they come out with something, everyone's like, all right, yeah, I'm going to say
salivating, frothing.
Right, like, ooh, new Brett Stevens column. Here I go, you know, here, whatever. It's like, it's that sort of thing. People can't wait to dunk on her. But I started reading about this book, and it actually seems really completely fucked up. It is about the death of her ex-lover, yep. Raya Elias. They've yep. been best friends since 2000, before Elizabeth wrote Eat, Pray, Love. But after Raya was diagnosed with pancreatic and liver cancer mm-hmm. and given, like, a terminal prognosis, Elizabeth broke up with her husband from the end of Eat, Pray, Love. Sorry, spoiler alert if you haven't read it already, but she left the Eat, Pray, Love guy. She left the love, and she went to her friend, and they became madly in love, and they became a couple and had a commitment ceremony. But, like, it gets more and more fucked up, right? So it's like, okay, that's kind of weird. Why would you brag about that? But then it talks about how she got her back addicted on drugs, like, yeah. would help her do heroin.
She would go to the needle exchanges and be recognized by people.
Oh, would you recognize?
No, I would never have recognized her in a million years.
Somebody at the needle exchange is not someone I would think would recognize. Well, you know what? Whatever. So Elizabeth also, helped her inject heroin. She mm-hmm. Made it clear in the book that she was trying to kill her lover. She was trying to kill her. She got mad when Raya began suspecting her and started pulling away. She got mad at her lover slash... It's just fucking crazy. So her ex did die.
Yes.
And after that, Elizabeth said that she came to her in a dream and said that it was totally fine for her to write a book about her.
I saw that too.
And she said that it's really fucking crazy. It sounds
the whole thing. First of all, she has been on every single podcast I have in my feed.
Oh no,
I cannot escape. But I have not listened. I've only listened to the promo, and I'm just like, this is bonk. I can't have this in my life. It's bonkers.
This is another nugget from the book. Elizabeth wrote that she could hear Raya's spirit telling her that Raya likes being dead, kind of digs it, and that Elizabeth should write all the details down because Raya's spirit has no use for dignity because she's dead. So there you have it. It's okay. It's what Elizabeth Gilbert is doing is okay.
It was uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. Is she
uncomfortable?
Our hosts on your podcast feed? Are you skipping these interviews?
Oh, yeah, I skipped them all. No. I couldn't. There was too much. I mean, it's like, it was because she also became addicted to drugs, right?
Yep.
That's
mm-hmm.
part of the story. She became addicted to drugs because Raya, basically, who had been addicted, got clean and then was like, well, I only have a couple months left and I want to enjoy myself. I mean, it was like, look. I love that for her, you know, but there was something about the trying to overdose her without her consent. It's like super problematic for me. And yeah. So I was like, I feel like this isn't something that deserves my eyeballs, my brain space, or my money.
Yeah, it's the final boss of, like, mid-2010s oversharing essay culture. Happening
yeah.
in this book.
It could have been an essay. It didn't have to be a book.
Yeah. Woof. Okay, Alyssa, are you sanity or petty this week?
Erin, I'm sanny.
Mm.
I've never been higher on life. Today, as we record Wednesday, is the final episode of The Summer I Turned Pretty, which has been my entire personality all summer. I have never enjoyed anything more.
Uh-huh.
It is my best friend. Since the fourth grade, her daughter is 16, and she was up here for a lot of the summer. And so every Thursday, we would talk about what had happened Wednesday night before. And so she says to me last night, I was like, what are you going to do? I'm like, what time are you watching? We should watch together. And she was like, well, she and her daughter had a thing tonight. So they were going to wake up early this morning, and they both overslept, and they're not talking to each other because. Like, it was so important. But it has just been, like, the nicest, most fun community. And I'm like very excited for Jenny Han, who has like written these books. These books came out like, I think, 10 or 13 years ago at this point. And she's, you know, a child-free woman in her mid to late 40s, and she's having great success, and I hope she gets celebrated. But mostly the community, it just watching online, and look, was this show made for me? No, but I'm not alone. There are plenty of 50-year-olds enjoying themselves watching this somewhat problematic storyline about a girl in love with two brothers. But, like, it is the reason I think there are, like, similarities between this community and the Swifties, because Jenny uses all of these Easter eggs, and she has so much, like, she has such an ability to understand sort of, like, to foretell what the audience is going to catch on to. Like, she knew in this season when Belly was supposed to go to Paris and she didn't, that people would hearken back to Rory and Lorelai, and, like, when Rory dropped out of Yale. And in one of her scenes, she actually had, as when Belly is deciding to go to Paris, a girl's actually wearing a Yale t-shirt. And to me, it's like, I've enjoyed every minute of it, and I'm so bummed. I've enjoyed the conspiracy theories. I've enjoyed the people who break down all the infinity symbols, the use of the number 14 and everything. I can't wait tonight to see if all the loons I've started following on social media were correct. And I'm excited about it. It's benevolent and it's lovely, and I'm sad it's going to be over.
That's called, like, fan service. And I think that's, like, such a sign of respect when, like, creators of a show are able to put something together that, like, gets people talking and looking for hidden signals and clues and stuff. It just means that it was made with care. And I think a lot of shit is just kind of, like, slap lately. And so
it is. And she even talks about it in a couple of the interviews that she did about the ending, because, as the diehards would tell you, the book, so it's based on a trilogy of books, the book leaves you two episodes ago, so this is uncharted territory for everybody. So they don't know what's going to happen. And Jenny actually has said that, like, she herself is a fan, like, she likes to be a fan of a TV show, and so she really wanted these last episodes to make people feel fulfilled and happy, but also be true to the story. And I was like, you know what, girl? Live your best life.
That's awesome.
So I'm excited. I have no plans tonight. I'm going to open up some of my naked wines, sit on the sofa in my hysteria sweatshirt, and I'm hoping it's just more than an hour. That's my dream. That's my dream for myself.
That sounds amazing. Last night, my husband wanted to watch Weapons, which I'm interested in because I like the filmmaker, because I thought Barbarian was great, and it's the guy who did Barbarian. And I wanted to watch it before it got, like, spoiled for me, because I've already gotten, like, some aspects of it spoiled for me. Too tense. I'm like already right on the edge of, like, losing it at all times. And so I was like, I can't. There's a jump scare that happens.
Nope.
And I'm like, nope.
You know I can't. You know I can't. Wait, have you watched Girlfriend, the Robin Wright show on Amazon?
No.
Okay. Here's what I will say. I would say the plot is simple at best, but it is an enjoyable watch.
Okay. All right.
It's like thrillery, but not too gory.
All right. Well, I like vibes. I just like the tension. Tension is not what I need in my life right now. I don't need additional tension. I need to, like, if I'm watching, like, Great British Bake Off and they don't show me the cake soon enough, I'm like, gosh, show it to me.
You get antsy. Totally understand.
Right.
Believe me.
I'm at an 11 right now, and I need to turn down the temperature like America itself. Okay. That's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you for being my ride or die this week. Every week. I feel like every time we talk, as soon as we're done talking, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad we did that.
Yeah.
Even though it's like my job.
Well, it's like our habit. Like, what would life be? You know, it's like we see each other. It's how we get to see each other.
Yeah. And also, if you guys want to get in touch, listeners, viewers, hysteria@crooked.com is the shared inbox that we all have. There's a layer of safety between me and the messages. So if you send me something mean, I'm not even going to see it. So don't waste your energy. And there'll be more hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Aaron Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Claire Fogarty is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gaia Dostoevsky and Claudia Sheng. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. Kendra James is our executive producer of culture and entertainment. And thank you to Daisy Cruz and David Tolles for production and marketing support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Best Air Allergen Air Filters. They trap larger airborne contaminants to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Best Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our entire selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening this week. Save big.